Welcome to the Modern Vinyl Podcast Random Pool Edition. I'm Alan Miller. This is a continuation of our series on Dylan in the 80s, where we discuss every album and live album that Dylan put out in the 80s. This particular episode is on his first live album of the 80s, which is entitled Real Live, where he was kind of touring on the back of his album Infidels, which came out a year before. I'm joined as usual by Matt Pfeffercorn, who is a massive Dylan fanatic and knows the majority of his stuff inside and out. So without further ado, here you go.
If you're traveling the North Country Fair, will the winds hit heavy on the borderline? Remember me to one who lives there, for she once was a true love of mine.
This is Alan.
This is Matt.
And this is Bob Dylan in the 80s, 1984. Real Live. Real this time.
The tour for Infidels. This is the album he was touring on.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Had a pretty good band. Mick Taylor, you know, obviously played with the Stones. An accomplished guitar player.
Very accomplished, yes. Yeah. Blues guitar player, we should add.
Yes, yeah.
Southern rock blues.
Kinda. Steeped in the blues. Yeah. Ian McLaughlin on keyboards, who recently passed away.
Yep.
Greg Sutton on bass. Colin Allen on drums. So, a solid band.
An odd band for him.
An odd band that was just put together, it seems like. Which were most of his tours up to this point from the 80s. You know, I don't know if he's putting it together or what, but...
Well, we know Knopfler's not putting it together because he's out of the picture now.
Right. Yeah.
It's kind of Bob on his own.
It's Bob, yeah. He did this tour with Santana also.
Okay. So what did Santana have going on at the time? Was that... Because Winning came out in the 70s, right?
Yeah.
That's like the last really like singly kind of song I remember.
You know, it might have been something like Amigos or something like that.
Something terrible.
Honestly, I listened to an album a couple of days ago at the store, and it was right around this time period. I think real cool cover, flashy colors and all that. I had it on for like two songs.
Yeah.
It was really bad. But there you go. Artist of this stature in the 80s. Probably not knowing what to do. What's Carlos Santana going to do in the 80s that's going to matter? You know?
I mean, he figured out a way to reinvent himself in the 70s when he started doing the jazz fusion. He went through a whole trip, and it was
and it was great.
It was good.
John McLaughlin helped in that a lot.
But like when he started doing the Deva Dip or whatever.
Right, yeah.
And like he took on a full different name, and it was all Buddhist, and there's crazy artwork. Or whatever it is.
And crazy guitar work. I mean, it was great.
Oh, so good. Fast playing. He was playing fast as hell. It was really good.
It was a lot easier to accomplish that in the 70s, given it was arena rock. It was big. It was huge. The bigger, the better. You know, in the 80s.
And by the end of the 70s, fusion was absolute shit. So there's that, too.
Oh, man.
Like, fusion was a flash in the pan. Like, from 68 to 72... it was on fire.
Yeah.
Like it was just on fire. And then like mid-70s to late-70s, it was so far
jazz just took a nosedive.
Like Weather Report starts
you
spitting out all
that
shit.
You could follow it by Weather Report.
Yeah.
And Chick Corea just how when like...
Yeah, it
took
when Return to Forever started having like all those vocalists and stuff, it just started getting really bad.
It took a real big shit dive. You know, I mean,
just a straight the bird on Return to Forever just took a shit dive.
It did.
And then we ended up with Herbie Hancock in the 80s.
We did. He had a big hit, though.
Yeah, he made some money. I mean,
Rocket.
I guess he probably made more money with Rocket than he ever did with, like, Headhunters probably. Or anything, didn't he?
Probably, and that's a shame.
Well, everybody talks about Headhunters now. Nobody talks about Rocket anymore.
No.
Other than in context of, look how cool that video was, or look how neat those samples were that he used.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was it. That was that whole album.
Yeah.
I listened to the album. I remember buying it on cassette because I loved that tune. And then you listen to the rest of it, and you get that, oh, the blueprint. You just need two songs.
Right.
One's going to be a hit. We're going to do a video. Let's move on. He did another album like Future Shock, but it sucked.
Yeah. But the only one people talk about now is Headhunters.
Right.
Because of Watermelon Man.
That's what they should talk about.
Yeah.
Because it's killer.
But that's not even fusion. That's funk.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Anyhow, we're getting way off topic of Real Live, but that's okay because it's Real Live.
That's right.
So let's talk about Highway 61 for just a second. You know,
Just a couple seconds.
The boogie-woogie Johnny B. Good.
Yeah.
Crazy version of Highway 61.
You know, yeah. Chuck Berry. And I think that has a lot to do with probably the love that Mick Taylor and Dylan both have for Chuck Berry and his style of playing.
Yeah.
You know, obviously in the Stones, they played Around and Around. Johnny B. Good, I'm sure, at some point. But it has that lick.
You know, and it's really dangerous as a musician. I'm going to take up for him a little bit. It's really dangerous as a musician to really like another band or another genre and then accidentally jump into that.
Have it not bleed over and you don't even know it's bleeding over.
For instance, if I wrote I love Depeche Mode, but I can't throw people or people into something that I'm writing. It's not going to work.
No.
Because I'm not a dance band. I'm not, and it's not 1985 anymore. You can't really do that way. If you're not close to that genre, you can't really do it. Dylan's a bit close to the rock and roll thing, but he's still a little too far away to cut into Johnny B. Good riffs during the chorus.
Right. Yeah.
Especially on Highway 61.
And pull it off. I mean, Highway 61.
That song's so classic.
It is.
And the sound of that song is so classic. Was Bloomfield on it? Did he play guitar on it?
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
They really don't pull it off here, honestly. And maybe a bad track to open the album with.
Well, I would argue that Maggie's Farm would have been a bad track to open the album with, because this version of Maggie's Farm is my absolute least favorite version of Maggie's Farm I've ever heard.
Yeah. Well, and here's my take. There's only 10 songs on this album.
Right.
This is obviously a contract obligation that he has to Columbia Records to put this out.
But let's also break that down. There's only 10 songs on there. That means they were cherry-picked out of the whole show.
Exactly.
He cherry-picked those two songs to be on this album.
Did he? Or did somebody else?
Someone did. Someone cherry-picked those to be on there.
I could see Bob going, I don't care. I don't care what you put on here. All you have to put on there is I and License to Kill. You can pick the rest.
Yeah, why no Joker Man? Why no Blind Willie McTell?
Yeah. He probably wasn't playing Blind Willie McTell live then.
But why? Why wouldn't he play that live?
Because it wasn't on the album.
That's true.
And
if you looked at this on the shelf, if you were, you know, back in the day, if you were going in to buy a Bob Dylan record, because you heard the new Bob Dylan live albums out, and
right,
you really liked, what's the one from the 70s? Hard Rain? Was that one live?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, so you really liked Hard Rain. You're like, oh, shit, the new live Dylan's out. So you go and you look at the list. You're like, yeah, Howie 61,
oh,
Maggie's
man.
Farm, Tangled Up and Blue. Oh, yeah, shit, I'm getting
it. It's loaded. It's loaded with great songs.
And Tombstone Blues, oh, and then you get home. And I can just imagine how disappointing it would be.
It's kind of like making your first Led Zeppelin album be The Song Remains the Same. is that a bad...
No, I don't think that's a...
Is that not
fair? I
think
Song Remains the Same is pretty good. I think it's overproduced, but I think it's pretty good. The right. songs, for the most part, sound pretty much like the album.
But what I'm saying is, if you went in hearing a couple of songs on the radio and didn't have a Led Zeppelin album, and you're like, ooh, I love live albums. Yeah. I'll get the song Remains the Same.
That wouldn't be the first one to start with.
Right.
But even, to me, buying this as like your first Dylan live album would be like buying Coda as your first Zeppelin album.
Yeah. Well,
because Coda's got a couple that are all right, but for the most part, it's pretty terrible.
At least you didn't go in and buy Budokan, the Dylan live album.
Haven't heard it, so.
Yeah. Listen to that sometime.
I've had enough live Dylan for a little bit. I got to take a breather.
You do have Carlos Santana playing on Tombstone Blues, though.
Are you shitting me? I didn't even make it to Tombstone Blues.
See? Damn it, Alan.
I checked out. You know, let me talk about what I like. That's the easiest. Let me talk about what I like.
Let's talk about what you like.
I like.
You know what I like.
I like. Yeah, I do. I like Eye and Eye on here. I don't think it's bad at all.
Okay.
I think for his touring band for this album, Eye and Eye worked.
Yeah.
Because it's just kind of rock bluesy enough to work.
Mm-hmm.
I think It Ain't Me, Babe works okay. There's
it
crowd
does.
Participation. They sing the chorus with him.
It's a classic.
It's a classic.
He doesn't screw it up.
No, and I mean, he's...
He keeps it true to form.
He's got the shit on autopilot when he's playing that. Like, he knows that song so well.
And honestly, he could be on autopilot right now in his career.
Yeah.
He could be on autopilot.
But he's not. He's still trying new things. I'll give him that. I mean, he's doing the whole standards bit. Even though I don't like it, I'll still give him he's trying new things. I don't like it.
I'm talking about at this point.
Oh, at that point? In the
real
life.
Real life.
Like, at the point now.
Oh, yeah. I don't like it either.
He's trying, though. I mean, he's trying new things. I'll give him that.
You know, and at this point, why not?
It feels sincere.
Do what you want to do.
Shit feels sincere.
Yeah. His voice sounds good.
Yeah.
I just don't like the material.
Yeah, I don't listen to the original material, much less his version of it.
But
anyhow.
No, at this point in his career doing real live, I think he's on autopilot.
Well.
Most of the time.
Most of the time. No pun intended. Tangled Up in Blue is really good.
Tangled Up in Blue is the standout on this.
It's almost a reason to get it. Not to buy it, but to listen to it.
Yes.
Just to listen to Tangled Up in Blue. I can't think of a reason to buy it, but to listen to
it. If you see it used, it's worth picking up.
$200.
Because at this point, he had sat in a hotel room and reworked lyrics to Tangled Up in Blue.
So he did it like then?
Yes. Yeah. And playing it live on this tour, it sounds amazing.
What balls, though, to like take a song like Tangled Up in Blue and be like, I'm going to write some different lyrics.
Hey. Yeah.
What balls? Blowing in Wind wasn't that great. I'm going to write a few other lyrics to it.
That to me, that's the biggie. I love Masters of War. I love that he kind of updated it in a sense of, let's make this rock and roll punch through the message. It's a protest tune, and now it's in your face, and it's a killer version. It's kind of stayed that way until the late 90s when it returned to the acoustic format. But the fact that he kind of used it in different scenarios at the Grammys in 91 to make a statement.
Right.
When the Gulf War was going on. You know, that's classic Bob.
I mean, Masters of War is possibly his best. It's his best anti-war song for sure, but it's possibly his best protest song he's ever done.
Oh, yeah. Because
it cuts straight through all the bullshit.
Yeah.
Right into your heart. Like there's a reason that every alternative band in the 90s covered it.
Right.
Because it was that good.
Yeah. Yep.
And then I didn't make it through the rest. So you talk about the rest of them.
You know, Ballad of a Thin Man. Here again, a great song. The lyrics.
Yeah.
Incredible. It's just kind of a...
You're not going to listen to this version of it.
No. Girl from the North Country. Great tune, obviously.
Does he do it acoustic on here?
He does it acoustic.
Okay.
And it's kind of the same as It Ain't Me, Babe. It's great, but it's not one that you just, after you hear it, you're like, wow.
What's your favorite? What's your favorite version of Girl from North Country that he's done?
My favorite version?
Because he's went through three or four iterations of it.
Yes. 99, that touring band. Larry Campbell, Charlie Sexton, David Kemper.
I was always partial to the Johnny Cash version, like him and Johnny Cash doing the duet.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I just always felt that was really neat.
Yeah.
And then outside of that, Leo Kottke did a cover of it that was just
absolutely, I haven't heard that.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he's an amazing guitarist to begin with and a decent singer, too.
Yeah.
But he did a version of it that was a little more intricate, a little finger style type thing. It was really good.
I'll have to search that
out. I like the Cash and Dylan version of it from is it Nashville Skyline that was
It is. Yep.
Yeah, I really like that.
That was a great time period. I wish that Dylan and Cash would have done more
together.
Oh, they
made such a good fit, didn't they?
They made a great fit. But, you know, I mean, both of them had careers. Bob was kind of coming back at the time, and Johnny was in full swing. They were both so busy. I'm surprised that they even found time to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say it was that mutual respect they had that was probably allowing it to work.
Yeah.
And I'd say probably Bob even had more respect for Johnny.
I think Bob was in awe.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of his heroes.
Well, he was doing the country album. He had to, he had to do that.
Yeah.
You got to pay respect to them to do that.
True. True.
Man, I wish we were doing Nashville Skyline.
Tombstone Blues featuring Carlos Santana on guitar. You know, I mean.
What was Tombstone on Bring It All Back Home? Or was it on Highway 61?
Oh, man.
Because here's the thing. Tombstone, Bout of a Thin Man, and Highway 61 were all the same album, weren't they?
Right, yeah, yeah.
Isn't that right?
At this point,
I want to double check that.
You've got I and I and License to Kill, you know, from Infidels. And then you're right. Highway 61, Maggie's.
It's just odd. It's odd that he would pick so many from possibly the same album. I'm not sure if they're,
but they're great songs too. It's classic.
They're all on Highway 61. Was I wonder if it was okay, so Highway 61 came out in 65.
Yeah,
this came out in 84. I wonder if it was some sort of, like, you know, 65 75 85 or something like that, like they're like 20 years or
I think you're reading into
you think
too
I'm
much.
Reading too far? Yeah, I mean, it seems odd to me that he would do three songs from Highway 61.
Yeah.
Maybe because it was the more a little more bluesy.
Yeah, maybe it worked better for the set he was doing. What we should do,
because Maggie's Farm's on Bringing It All Back Home.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that was the thing. Maybe he was just trying to pull from that more bluesy period of Bringing It All Back Home and Highway 61.
Yeah.
Because when you get the Blonde on Blonde, all the bluesiness kind of starts to go away.
Yep.
A little more. It's a little more out there, a little more songwriter-y kind of thing. Singer-songwriter bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. I just think it's odd that there's three on there, or even four counting Maggie's Farm.
Only 10 tunes. But, you know, at that time period in the 80s, there weren't long albums. A long album was 42 minutes.
Yeah.
And your standard Van Halen album was 28 minutes and 32 seconds.
The Van Halen standard.
Right. I don't know what this one clocks in at, but it looks like about...
And 20 minutes is just David Lee Roth screaming.
Right.
The other three is Eddie doing a solo.
Doing a solo.
Yeah.
And this album was produced by Glenn Johns.
Oh, wow. I didn't know
that. Kind of strange.
Yeah, he's a super famous producer.
Yeah.
He's done tons of stuff.
Yeah.
Was he British? Glenn Johns? No. Is Glenn Johns British? I know he's really well known for his drum sounds, like when he produces an album.
Yeah.
He's got this whole method for miking a drum kit that's the Glenn Johns drum sound.
There's a book out that came out a couple years.
Really?
On him, actually.
Oh, yeah. Sound Man.
Now it all comes back.
Yeah, I remember seeing this book. This only came out a few years ago, right?
Yeah. And he's passed away.
Yeah, yeah.
So after I finish it, I'll let you read it. Or actually,
I would love to read that.
If you want to take it now, you can. I'm in the middle of two books anyways.
Yeah, I've got two started as well.
Yeah. You'll finish it before I will.
Yeah, it's big print. I would assume. It's big print. It won't take as long. Yeah, but no, Glenn Johns was huge.
Yeah.
He was huge with the Stones, wasn't he? Like, yes. That's how he cut his teeth at, yes. on, I think, yeah. was the Stones.
Yeah.
And he might have, oh, man, it's all kind of coming together now. So yeah. he was with the Stones. Mick Taylor was on the tour. Oh, man. So, I guarantee there was a little bit of networking going on yeah, there to make that tour happen like that.
Had to be.
So anything else about Real Live that you want to talk about? Anything else that you really, really like about Real Live? Is there any reason for anyone to purchase Real Live?
Oh,
and I don't even mean that like snarky. I mean that honestly. Is there a reason?
Well, not until you're about 20 deep in your Dylan collection.
And then you're just going to, you need to get more info, so you grab.
Yeah. Oh, you know, or that version of Tangled Up in Blue is
incredible. That's the takeaway, right? The takeaway is that version of Tangled Up in Blue.
This, to me, is one of those versions like the Rolling Thunder 75 version. With the
cocaine
makeup,
face.
The white makeup and... And all that, the gypsy, you know, look. It's a great version. It's worth it just for that. But don't go out of your way to get it.
If you're traveling in the North Country Fire, where the winds hit heavy on the borderline, remember me to one who lives there. She once was a true lover.